Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hi folks, be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
We are going to be talking to you about a man who kind of made his demise, but he's also very prominent in our history.
Yes. Now, I've talked a lot about people that people maybe have never heard of. This guy, I'm going to bet most everybody has heard of the name Jim Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Now, his name is associated with a terrible weapon, a knife with a 14-inch blade, actually double-edged for a space of about 2.5 inches from the curve of the point to the tip of the blade.
Did he fashion this blade?
Yeah.
Did he?
That was kind of his thing.
That was his signature?
Yeah. But there's been some misconceptions regarding the original Bowie knife. For many years, this knife was claimed to be the one Bowie used in a massacre in 1827 to kill a guy, but in fact, he actually just used a butcher knife. So maybe that's when he decided, you know what, I need a better knife than a butcher knife. So he developed this. Anyway, he was not a confirmed troublemaker, yet he became involved in more scenes of bloody violence than perhaps any other man along the frontier.
He wasn't hanging out with the right crowd, was he?
Well, depends. But, you know, he was not a killer in one sense of the word. However, when he was in a fight or wounded, he would charge in like a grizzly bear for the kill. And his savage lust to kill intensified by the slashing and the maiming with his dreaded knife.
The Bowie knife.
Yeah, he kind of really got into it, I guess you could say. Anyway, so 1814, Jim left home and built a shack in Louisiana.
Okay.
But the dangers of the swamps just became way too dull for Jim. So in 1818, he and his brother, his name is Rezin, speculated in the illegal African slave trade. They became business partners with Jean Lafitte.
Lafitte?
Lafitte, on a place called San Luis Island.
Okay.
Now, the Bowie brothers bought slaves from the pirate Lafitte at $1 a head, and they would sneak them into the territorial limits of the United States. Now, there, they would turn the slaves over to customs officials and claim the, quote, informer's reward. Now, the curious law enabled the Bowie brothers to buy back the slaves at half price, receiving a proper bill of sale and the right to sell the slaves within the United States.
So they were getting $1, and then they were getting the finder's
the
fee,
reward.
The reward, and then they were buying them back half price and then selling. So, wow!
What a deal, right?
Jeez!
Quite the businessman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in 1830, Jim met and married the beautiful Maria Ursula in Mexico. The tragedy which shook Bowie more than anything else in his life was the death of his wife and two children in 1833. They actually died of cholera while visiting Maria's parents in Mexico. This really crushed him. It was hard for him. But soon after that, Jim found himself fighting for Texas independence. And in October of 1835, he was actually at a place called the Mission Concepcion near San Antonio. And there were 100 Texans defeated 400 Mexicans. Now, this was a battle that actually only lasted about 30 minutes, but they were victorious. Now, the fall of the Alamo in 1836 was, of course, the battle which opened the campaign of Santa Ana in Texas. The massacre of its defenders caused a huge sensation throughout the United States. The horror of it all intensified by rumors and mystery. And, of course, romantic tales began to fly. And, you know, the TV and movie industry has definitely romanticized that whole process.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, you know, so the question was, the fall of the Alamo a tragedy, or was it just a military blunder? Okay. Now, Sam Houston told both Bowie and Colonel Travis to evacuate the place immediately and to destroy it. Well, they didn't do it. and neither did they have scouts out to inform them of the approaching Mexican army.
Uh-oh.
So there were some things that were bad from the get-go. But, of course, this was not meant to imply that the gallant defenders of the Alamo were not brave. On the contrary, they were brave to the point of recklessness. When common sense should have told their leaders that a defensive retreat was the most logical thing, especially after Sam Houston had told them to get out of there. And they didn't do it. So in 1836, San Antonio was a town of about 7,000 people, and a number of whom were Mexicans that actually aligned with the cause of Texas. So there were some people that wanted Texas to take over. But the San Antonio River separated the town from the Alamo, with the Alamo being on the east side of the river. Now, south of the Alamo was the Alamo Village, and you could almost call that kind of a suburb of San Antonio.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a little village outside of the main town of San Antonio.
Living in the burbs.
Yeah. So anyway, the mission itself had neither the strength nor the compactness for a regular military base. The chapel bears the date of 1757, but apparently parts of the other works were built at a later date. The area actually comprises the fort, was nearly 3 acres, so not very big. So it's kind of understandable why these guys had a rough time defending it. So it would have taken nearly 1,500 men to successfully repel all of the assault by the Mexicans.
Okay.
So this might be a good spot for a break if you want to, Gina.
No, go ahead.
Okay.
You're good.
We're good?
Yep.
All right. Well, the Alamo consisted of a church, a hospital, a convent with a walled enclosure.
Okay.
And when converted into a fort in 1836, the works were mounted with 14 guns. Now, these weapons were of little effect against the Mexicans since they really didn't know how to use them. There's no other way to put it. They had these guns, but nobody really knew they used them.
He was a knife guy.
Yeah. But the people in the fort didn't really know how to use these guns. So here we are. The winter of 1836 saw Colonel Neal in command of San Antonio. He had two companies of volunteers. Now, although the government of Texas was then in open revolt against Mexican rule, it had not yet declared a final separation from its mother country.
Okay.
So at this time, the governor assigned Lieutenant Colonel William B. Travis to relieve Colonel Neal at San Antonio. Okay, so are you with me?
I'm with you.
We got Colonel Travis, you got Colonel Neal. Now, the men under Neal did not want to accept Travis as a succeeding commander.
And they didn't like him?
They didn't like him. They didn't want him.
Okay.
So they demanded their colonel issue an order for them to elect their own commander out of their men.
Okay.
So they didn't like Travis, they didn't like Neal. They wanted to vote their own guy in there. Well, Colonel Neal was kind of on the spot, so he tried to arrange for an election to select a second in command. He was not successful and was nearly mobbed for his trouble. Well, Neal quickly amended his order, and Jim Bowie was unanimously elected a full colonel. Okay, so Bowie had been prominent in the campaign. His men loved him, and he was a good leader. Bowie became a colonel in February of 1836.
Okay.
So now we've got kind of a mixture of leadership, so to speak, here. Well, anyway, 2 weeks later, found Travis at the Alamo. Now, naturally, he was really mad over the condition of the affairs and demanded that he be placed in command. On the other hand, Bowie stated that he was in charge by virtue of the election and also that he should command the men who came with Travis.
So the election results stood, huh?
Well, sort of. Sort of. And now Travis, when he came in, he brought a company of recruits, part of the regiment of a cavalry of from the Texas government intended to raise. Travis' command also brought in some Mexican recruits to the fort.
Mm-hmm.
And thus at the Alamo on the day of Santa Anna's attack was Travis's company, recruits, and two volunteer companies under Colonel Bowie, a total of about 160 men.
Okay.
So
that's not a lot compared to what they're going to be facing.
Yeah, and we'll get to those numbers too.
Okay.
So nearly the entire garrison consisted of men who had recently arrived in Texas. And among the famous to fall here were Davy Crockett,
mm-hmm,
of Tennessee.
He showed up with 30 Tennesseans, is what I'm reading here. Is
yeah.
that correct?
Yeah. So they joined the command just a few weeks earlier. But anyway, General Santa Anna personally led the advance from Laredo. His troops consisted of a dragoon regiment. Now, that's a mounted, like a cavalry.
Okay.
A dragoon.
Okay.
The way I understand it, unless I'm wrong, somebody call in and let us know. So he had a dragoon regiment and three battalions of infantry. Now, I did the figures on this, and with the numbers, I came up with between 2,200 to 5,000. 2,200 on the low end, up to 5,000 on the high end.
On the high end, okay.
Yeah, depending on how many was in a regiment and how many were in battalions, because that varied. So it could have been 400 up to 1,000.
Just depending upon on where they were coming from?
Yeah, so we really don't know exactly how many were headed that way.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
So this was February 22nd. So the defenders of the Alamo failed to maintain an outpost scouting patrol, possibly due to the conflicting situation as to who was really in charge at this post. So nobody said, hey, let's go out and scout these people. But at any rate, they knew, of course, that the Mexicans were on their way. They knew they were coming.
Uh-huh.
But their immediate approach was unknown until Santa Anna's dragoons... Dragoons, I love saying that.
That sounds like a bad game.
I know. And anyway, when they were seen descending the slope west of the San Pedro Mountains, many residents fled in disorder, some to the fort and some to the open plains. So the civilians, they saw what was coming. They just headed out. They were out of there.
We're out of here.
Yeah.
Later.
So anyway, the defenders of the Alamo that same evening shot an 18-pound shell into the captured town, because they had captured San Antonio.
Okay.
So their shot was answered by Mexican gunners. Santa Anna himself claims that shortly after that, the commander of the Alamo raised a white flag and agreed to evacuate, if allowed to do so unmolested and retaining their weapons. Well, the Mexican dictator refused any what we call a parley,
right,
except to discuss an unconditional surrender. Yeah. Now, another report claims that parley taps were sounded by the Mexican bugler. Now, my understanding of that is the taps that are sounded would indicate, okay, we're going to have a truce and discuss surrender.
Right.
Okay.
So everybody hold your fire.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So that's what supposedly happened. And that buoy sent a courier under a flag of truce to inquire about its meaning. In other words, what's going on? Well, Santa Anna apparently was mad about this. He said he ordered no such bugler to sound parley, and that all the occupants of the fort would be treated as rebels with no surrender terms except that of his own choosing, which would be death.
Right.
Okay. So we don't know if that stuff really happened. Those are kind of the rumors surrounding that.
Rumor mill?
Yes. Well, after the messenger had returned to the Alamo, Travis asked his men to take an oath to fight to the bitter end. He also displayed great displeasure in the fact that Bowie had sent a courier in response to the Mexican parley, which we don't really know if that happened. So, now, in the movies and on TV,
okay,
you see...
This is the romanticization of it.
Yes. You see him draw a line in the dirt.
Yes.
And those that want to stay... step over the line. One of these days, I'm going to tell you a story about the coward at the Alamo.
Oh.
Now, the movie shows everybody stepping over the line.
But there was one who did.
There's one guy that said, this doesn't look real good. I'm going to leave. And I'll tell you. I'll get that story out one of these days.
Please do.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. Anyway, so the following morning, they were silenced by the 18-pounders from the fort, but they were quickly restored to operation. A regiment of cavalry and three battalions of Mexican infantry arrived on the 24th, and the siege was on. It lasted until the 6th day of March, a total of 11 days. Now keep in mind, 160 men against anywhere from 2,200 to 5,000. And they lasted 11 days, which to me is a miracle.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. But a determined resistance was offered by that band of men at the Alamo, some of whom actually had never fired a rifle. That's okay.
Well, you better run quick there, son.
You didn't have a lot of help.
No. Nope.
But the authority fell on Travis the second day of the siege when Bowie was stricken with pneumonia after injuring his spine in a fall. And so severe was his illness that Bowie probably never would have left the mission alive anyway.
Okay.
Regardless of the battle.
Yeah. He's going to die one way or another.
Right. So on March 1st, 32 men, reinforcements, actually stole through the enemy lines and entered the Alamo. Now, it's doubtful if Santa Anna's men didn't see him. So the order must have been, okay, let him go in and they're not going to leave.
Right.
So no big deal. Let him go. Anyway, Travis sent a courier to the government on March 3rd, and in this message, Travis claimed that none of his men had yet fallen, but that aid was desperately needed.
Mm-hmm.
Desperately.
Beyond desperately.
Yeah. Well, General Santa Anna fixed the morning of the 6th for the final and grand assault. It was a gray, dismal morning. The morning of the 6th found Crockett, Davy Crockett, looking out at the hordes of Mexicans. Now, can you imagine thousands of these guys storming towards you? And knowing the final moment, this was it. It was coming. So these soldiers were trained men, these Mexican soldiers.
Right.
Trained and experienced officers.
And they knew how to shoot guns.
Yes. that was a good thing. So certainly he picked up his long rifle, honed his knife, and waited. The plan of attack was simple. At the sound of the bugle, one attack took place from the north.
Okay.
Another was to storm the chapel, and a third rushed in from the west. So three sides, they were coming. So the guns of the fort were fired, but they were not very effective. The Mexican infantry had gotten in close to the wall. So when they're in close, obviously the cannon...
They can't shoot them.
No.
Mm-mm.
So by that time, all the outer walls and the batteries except one gun had been deserted. There was terrible hand-to-hand fighting, which took place until the last of the defenders was slain.
Right.
The body of Davy Crockett was found near the cannon, which was fired last. So he was, he's always been kind of my hero.
I've always liked Davy Crockett.
Yeah, Davy Crockett, yep. Now, Jim Bowie was slain in his sick bed, but not before he had dispatched two Mexicans with his pistols and slaughtered nine more with his terrible Bowie knife. The knife was still in Bowie's hand when his body was burned. The chapel was the last to fall. After the fall of the Alamo, the Mexican commander ordered that all slain Texans be burned. Okay? I don't know why, but that,
Okay. All right.
Anyway, so 1837, General Houston commissioned Colonel Sequin to collect as best he could the remains of the Alamo defenders for military burial. So the bones and ashes that could be located were placed in one large casket and buried in a peach orchard a few hundred yards from the fort. So the brave defenders of the Alamo died for a republic that they didn't see come into effect. I mean, it did, obviously. Sure.
Eventually, yes.
Yeah. And so that's kind of the story of Jim Bowie and really the story of the Alamo. So...
I cheated and I brought up Wikipedia.
Okay.
And it said that he was inducted posthumously into the Blade Magazine's Cutlery Hall of Fame in 1988 at a Blade show in Atlanta, Georgia, in recognition for the impact that his design made upon generations of knife makers and, of course, cutlery companies. Because you think about the big knives and His knife is synonymous. It's just a Bowie knife, and any manufacturer can make one now and call it a Bowie knife. But he was very, very instrumental in that. And so I have just kind of some back history and some legacy.
Well, and I've got to tell you, as a young man, enthralled with Western cowboys and Indians, mm-hmm. I had a Bowie knife.
Did you?
I did. I mean, it was probably so dull I couldn't have cut butter with it, but it was.
It was the fact of.
It was a Bowie knife, and I was 12 years old, and I thought I was pretty cool because I had a Bowie knife, supposedly.
Yeah, I'm sitting here actually just kind of reading some different things about Jim Bowie, and It says, despite his continual pronouncements of wealth, he had an estate that was found to be very small. His possessions were auctioned off for only $99.50.
Oh, wouldn't you have loved to have that original knife that he had in his hand?
Oh, boy, howdy. You were hoping, well, obviously, I'm pretty sure he was buried with it, but that would be an artifact for, you know, for the Smithsonian.
In fact, I would almost bet that some of the Mexican soldiers probably took it. I don't know. Who knows?
So you are not going to be here next week, or are you? Maybe.
We'll see.
Weather depending.
we'll see what happens in the next day or two. But yeah, we'll let you know.
Okay, please do. Of course, Dr. History here on Zeb at the Ranch, and of course we love. You know, you always give me quite such the history lessons, and you know, of course, I remember learning about this in high school, but half the time I was, you know, either talking in class, passing notes, or just wasn't paying attention. So now that I'm older, I actually pay attention, and you always come up with some great things. For your segments, of course, you're heard all over the world.
It's true. I've actually, on my webpage, I've hit over 1 million hits on my webpage. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean 1 million listeners, but anyway, so all over the world, yeah. About 130 countries have, again, not necessarily listened, but they have hit on the webpage, so it's kind of exciting.
Where do people find your webpage?
Dr-History.com.
Dr-History.com. Country, can you actually look at the countries and see who's like...
Yeah,
who,
I can
and
see.
And which one's the...
Well, it was China when I was over visiting China, mm-hmm. when all the students were listening. Now it's the United States, but Brazil, Canada, Russia, Vietnam.
Really?
Cambodia, Taiwan, Australia.
You're world-renowned.
Brazil.
Yes. World-renowned Dr. History right here from our area and right here on Zeb at the Ranch, of course. Thank you for coming in today.
You bet.
And hopefully we will see you next week, but if not, we'll
have somebody.
You will square me away. I know you will.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.